Du lytter til Hestedølærerne. Podcasten for dig, der er dølæge eller veterinærsygeplejerske og arbejder med heste. Mit navn er Emma Thomsen. Jeg er dølæge og arbejder som konsulent for Børinger Ingelheim. I Hestedølærerne taler vi om tilstanden og sygdommen, der kan ramme heste, men vi tager også andre emner op, som er relevante for dig, der arbejder med hestesundhed. Denne podcast er lavet af Børinger Ingelheim, og med denne podcast ønsker vi at give noget tilbage til dig, der arbejder med hestesundhed. Vi ønsker at tage emner op, som er interessante og relevante for dig, og hvis du har forslag til emner, du gerne vil høre mere om, eller tips til en gæst, du gerne vil høre, så tøv ikke med at kontakte os. Mine kontaktoplysninger finder du i podcastens beskrivelse.
Welcome to this second session about objective gait analysis of the horse. This section is about SLIPE and how to use this in your lameness workup. I'm Martin Osterwall from Boehringer Ingelheim. I have still my dear colleague Emma Thompson with me from Boehringer Ingelheim, and we have a special guest, and that is the co-founder of SLIPE, Elin Herlin. And Elin, would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Martin. Thank you so much for inviting me to this podcast. My name is Elin Herlund. As you said, I am one of the founders of SLIPE AI. I'm also a veterinarian. I did my PhD in equine biomechanics and have sort of been obsessed with horse motion even before then. I used to be a rider before I became a vet. And I've worked at the university hospital for many years, working with lame horses and in general clinical practice. And now all my time goes into research and development for gait analysis for large animals in general, but specifically for horses.
Thank you, Elin. And let's jump into the first question we have prepared for you. Could you please introduce artificial intelligence and how it works with objective gait analysis and how that all comes together in SLIPE?
Yeah, so objective gait analysis, so sort of objectively measuring motion in horses, and specifically for the sake of trying to understand lameness, you can do that with different types of devices. And for me, AI was a way to take objective gait analysis into a technology where you don't have to interfere with equipment that you place onto the horse. So what we did with SLIPE was really to try to use artificial intelligence for something called computer vision. So a high-level understanding of a computer of something in an image. And in this case, what you have in the image or a video is a horse. And the artificial intelligence would then throw sort of artificial markers onto the horse's body in the same places where we would have wanted to measure the motion, with either sensors placing them on the skin or different types of markers. So AI was for me really a way to take objective gait analysis into something that was more useful and simple for a veterinarian. Because as an equine vet working with lameness, what you don't have is time. So just instrumenting the horse, even if it takes only 5 minutes, it's those 5 minutes where you could have taken a break or to have a sandwich, which was your lunch, or go to the bathroom. So from personal experience, I know how, really precious time is for a horse vet, and AI could really help us to let you do gait analysis in horses without using any physical devices that you put onto the horse.
So as an equine veterinarian, we used to look at the head, we used to look at the hip, we used to look at maybe the shoulders, maybe how well the horse steps through in the fetlock, etc. I read something about SLIPE is analyzing 100 points. Is
yeah,
that true?
Even more than 100 points. So that's the beauty of the system that we have with SLIPE. We don't have to produce a new sensor and try to find a way to attach it to the body. If we want to increase the number of anatomical locations that we measure on a horse's body, we teach the AI to find that point, and then we validate that to make sure that it does it in a very good way.
And obviously, you can't get every 100 points in every picture frame you film the horse. So is that AI judging whether this is high quality, low quality, to judge in and judge out and make the kind of the full picture or the useful picture?
Yeah, well, we do get more than the 100 points in every frame, for sure. But we have, of course, a system, because now we're using AI for medical purposes. And when you do that, there is something that's really important, and that's that you can feel very secure that what the AI is doing has a high quality. So that means when we look at a point from a specific part of the video that a vet has recorded of a horse that's trotting, we have a very sophisticated system judging if each of these points are very well visible, that the sort of prediction that the AI does of this point is logical. And then AI will actually predict anatomical locations that you sort of cannot see. So you have to watch out. So when the horse is trotting away from you, and let's say that the pelvis or the hips are actually obscuring the view of the head, AI would still predict the location of the head. It does that beautifully well, actually. So we see it does that really well. But we then have algorithms sort of forcing the AI to say, well, okay, you predict the location of the head, but we know that the head is obscured by the rest of the body. So we do not measure anything here. We say to our AI that we can only, you know, take out points and deliver the motion from them to the vet if we have passed through all these stages of sort of control. And I think that's a very important part when you use AI for medical diagnostics, that you have a very, you know, solid system to make sure that what you look at and what you get out is very correct.
So I've noticed using SLEIP that there are more recordings on the head than on the pelvis. Is that because the head is recorded both when a horse is running away from you and coming back to you? Is that a simple explanation?
Exactly. So, Martin, I can then tell that you are probably taking your recordings from like the regular veterinary view where horses trotting away and then coming back. And a lot of the times you do actually see the top of the head. So the occiput of the horse, you can see it when the horse is trotting away. I wouldn't say I look at it very much because I, as a veterinarian, I focus so much on what the pelvis is doing, where the limbs are doing. But the AI does see that. And then we allow it to collect those strides as long as the horse, you know, the head was actually visible in the frame. So that's true. You then collect more strides from the head because it's just simply more visible in the video.
Yeah. And I don't think we mentioned this, but SLEIP only works on iPhone for the moment.
Exactly. Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, it's an iPhone.
And is there an ideal height compared to the height of the horse you should put your phone at?
Yeah, so practically we recommend that you put your phone at the same height as the withers of the horse. Most of the time that's around eye height, but realizing now SLEIP is being sold in more than 50 countries all over the world. So when we started saying, please use eye height, we realized that people are actually of quite different lengths in different parts of the world also, and there are different sized horses. So the most optimal way is to try to keep the iPhone horizontal and at the level of the withers height of the horse.
And if there are some listeners now that think, oh, let's how do I get started with SLEIP? What do I need?
Well, that's really simple. Well, you need an iPhone and preferably a quite modern iPhone. And if you are a vet and you are ready to invest into a very good iPhone, then use a pro version from 13 and up. And then you need to, contact SLEIP to get an account. And normally you can just book a demo with us, which could be on the web, or you can actually even get started with what we now have as a recorded demo so you can understand how the application works and what you need to know to get started. And all of that is available sort of online.
Sounds very easy. It's almost like plug and play.
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah, and then play around with it to get familiar and good, obviously. So SLEIP is measuring asymmetry of the horse. And Emma, would you try to explain what is asymmetry and what is lameness and how are they tied together?
Yeah, so well, shortly, it's that asymmetry refers to the uneven movement patterns often seen in the horse's head, pelvis, or stride. And it can be caused by natural variation, training effects, or minor imbalances. And it does not always indicate pain or pathology. However, lameness is a clinical sign of pain or dysfunction, and is typically due to some kind of orthopedic issue. And it often presents as a consistent asymmetry that correlates with discomfort and reduced performance. So not all asymmetries equals lameness, but many horses show mild asymmetries without being clinically lame. Objective gait analysis might help us distinguish between normal variation and pain-related movement changes.
So with that follows a $100 question. If you have 100 horses that are sound, how many of them will show up with an asymmetry if you put them into a kind of a objective gait analysis?
Yeah, what would you say, Ellen? I think a lot of horses have small changes, and this all comes back to your decision making with getting all the information, as we talked about in the earlier episode, to have the information about the horse's back movements, the stride, the history, and so on. So another good thing with using gait analysis is that you can make a baseline, so you can watch the horse go when it's clinically fine, and then you have something to compare with when you measure a horse at a later point where you might think it has some kind of issue.
No, and Emma, I completely agree with you. I think more and more we will be using the horse's sort of baseline pattern as really your clinical baseline as well, and that we often see that changes are the most important things to detect. And I, of course, do a lot of research with a group at SLU in Uppsala, and Marie Rodin, who's one of my colleagues, she actually started a lot of research many years ago about just this question that you had, Martin. You know, what if you go into a population of horses that are seen as sound by their riders? What do you find if you use objective gait analysis? And we've done many studies since Marie started that, you know, research quest a long time ago, and we've looked at many different populations of sport horses, everything from elite horses to your regular, just riding horse or trotters. We've looked at, our colleagues have looked at polo horses and thoroughbreds. And in all of these populations, we see that if the trainer or the rider would define the horse as sound and sort of workable, more or less, or in athletic performance, then it's very common to detect asymmetries if you measure with this objective gait analysis devices, because they are a little bit like a microscope. So they would, you know, you see things that are not as easy to pick up with your eyes. And the magic number there in many of these populations is oftentimes around 70% of these horses would have asymmetries to a level where it's, you know, quite clearly to define with these objective gait analysis tools. In some of the populations, even more, up to 90%. And trotters seem to be a little bit more asymmetrical, especially if you jog them slow. And a lot of the Scandinavian veterinarians would know this, that oftentimes they do look quite sort of bobby in their pattern when you jog them slowly. Potentially that has to do also with their newer motor patterns. We see that from early age as well, that they are quite asymmetrical. So it's that, as you said, million-dollar question of understanding what is dysfunction and function. And of course, that varies between different veterinarians as well. And if we, you know, really are honest to ourselves, it maybe depends on which role you have as a veterinarian looking at the horse. Are you there during a horse inspection to look at the horse just before competition? Or are you there to look at a horse where a horse owner really has a complaint and a functional complaint? Then you might see things with sort of different eyes. And objectivity can always add to those situations, I believe.
So if we look at objective gait analysis in terms of prevention or kind of, yeah, forecasting or whatever, would it then be a good idea to make an objective gait analysis of a horse before it's turned into hard training and, you know, gait changes or gait asymmetries are likely to develop?
Absolutely. I think that's a brilliant idea. And we actually did some studies from the Uppsala biomechanics team also on that. We tried to understand with young horses, to understand their patterns before they move into training and if they become more asymmetrical with training. Tricky thing is they were often quite asymmetrical also as young. But of course, these changes and these sort of fingerprint patterns are really important to detect. So with the research that we've done before, we used to measure horses in these studies often maybe with 1, 2, 3 months intervals. I personally think now, having done a lot of gait analysis, that you need more resolution in your data than that to be able to really pick things up and understand the pattern. So I would have suggested practically to have a horse measured maybe once every week, once every second week. Then you are in very, very good control of the horse's baseline pattern and can see and can really flag if a horse that's being trained more would increase its asymmetry. That's a sign for the horse owner, for the vet to say, okay, we need to pick this up and see where this is going so that we don't have a mild lameness going on here, that we should probably be, doing an early intervention.
And when we saw looking at the lame horse, what is the pros and cons in mild lameness versus a moderate lameness that is obvious to the eye? What's the best use of these objective gait analysis systems?
Do you want to start, Emma? So,
I would say in mild cases, it's quite obvious because it's so hard to actually see what happened in the horse. So the system can tell you if you have an asymmetry in one limb, in many limbs, and it can guide you towards which limb to start with. And I think we'll get a little bit closer to how we do that later. In moderate lameness, we also have, you can see the changes in when you put the blocks in and so on, and see how much the lameness shifts, if it changes limbs and so on. So I think it definitely have a place in both mild and moderate lameness. And I think saying that it will be better in one of the cases, I think it's hard.
Yeah, I agree. And we often have these discussions in the clinic when we first implemented objective gait analysis in the university clinic in Uppsala. We were discussing, do you know beforehand if it's going to be a mild or a moderate lameness? And do we then, because at that point we were instrumenting all the cases and or the horses. So do you know beforehand? And I would say that it's very difficult to know beforehand if it's going to be a mild or a moderate lameness. So I love the routine, of course, being a bit biased here, but I love the routine of recording every case also to be able to document changes. And I think the research tells us, there are some studies by Kevin Keegan and his research team from the US, that even in moderate hind limb lameness, veterinarians tend to not know if it's the left or the right leg, or not know, but maybe not agree with each other. Given that fact, I think also in moderate lameness, it's very useful, especially for the hind limb lame horses. And then for me personally, I love to be able to show the horse owner the progress that you've made eventually. So even if you documented a case that was easy peasy to see with your eyes, it's still somewhat of the documentation of the process and the showing that to the owner that gives a lot of client value, I believe.
From my clinical background, I think it would be great to have, when you work up lamenesses, you might have 2 or 3 horses you look at the same time. You put in a diagnostic analgesia and you look at another horse, and then you go back and you have your paper and you think, is it better? Is it worse? I put 1.5 degree lame on left fore. It would be ideal to have something more objective to look at then, I think, because, sometimes the analgesia removes the lameness completely, and sometimes it removes part of the lameness. So it would be better to have some kind of support in those cases, I think.
I completely agree with you, Martin. And just maybe as a practical tip to the people that are using objective gait analysis and listening to the podcast, that When we look at the objective data and the blocks that you've done, you often would have written down that, you know, it was 100% positive, the block for your eyes. Just so you know, these objective gait analysis systems are very sensitive. So that means don't expect an improvement of maybe more than 50 or 70% when you feel, oh gosh, that was a good block. So oftentimes there is sort of, let's call it residual asymmetry that's there. And that can really disturb your gut feeling as a vet when you start using these systems. So a 50% block can be a really good block. And your visual impression of that might have been, you know, that was 100% positive. Just so people know and don't get disappointed with their blocks and start, you know, hunting down the very, very small last pieces of asymmetry that maybe you cannot take away with the diagnostic analgesia.
Yeah, and we all know how we are biased, and we always want to figure out what's wrong with the horse. And Friday afternoon, it's easy to make a block be positive in your head, even though you try to be as objective as possible. But here I really see where these kind of instruments can help us to do the right diagnostics and help the horse to find the right source of pain.
Well, thank you both. That's very useful tips. So you don't get even more gray hair out of using objective gait analysis. So when you have what we call slaped the horse or made a slape filming of a horse and a recording, and it's all been analyzed. So what do you actually get in the report besides what leg to focus on, Elin?
So the level of detail that you get is how each of the four legs are impacting and pushing off. So it's actually using a very basic biomechanical model of sort of how the mass, the center of the mass, would load the limb and then be pushed up by the limb. So you get impact and push-up asymmetries from the four legs. You also get the stride frequency. So actually in some horses that might, if you would compare one horse running at the same speed, having sort of pain in all four legs, you might actually have a horse that is very symmetrical, but it would have a very high stride frequency if it has pain in all four legs. So that's a parameter that I think will be useful more and more when we get into this longitudinal monitoring of our patients. So that's the type of information you get. So it's quite high detail. And the variation that you see in the run that you've done with the horse is also clinically important. So as Emma said before, the very consistent asymmetries are, of course, of higher clinical value than if you have a few strides that are very, very asymmetrical that might actually have been that the horse, has some biological variation in some of these strides. So consistent asymmetries are clinically of high value.
Can you mention a few cases where sleep really has made a difference?
Yeah, for me,
I
feel so biased because I think I love objective gait analysis and use the first systems, from 2008 and onwards. So, in my work as an orthopedic practitioner, objective gait analysis has been extremely important, also to train my eyes into seeing all these small details. So, for me, there's a general, big value. I think what is unique with sleep is this sort of ease of following horses over time. So maybe I can take a personal example of an old horse that I own and love, and that I bought without looking too closely because I'd been training him for a long time and felt he was extremely valuable and I really wanted to buy this horse. He had an asymmetry left hind. I knew that as a rider. I could see it on sleep. And of course, I ignored it because I wanted to buy the horse in whatever state. Now, quite some years later, this left hind leg is a big clinical problem. And it is not that I at all regret buying this horse, but a little bit like we said, like it had this consistent pattern. I'm learning over time that sometimes these asymmetries that aren't very big, but very consistent, they might in years to come be the problem leg. So now I have a horse with bone spavin that I treat quite frequently. That has really for me taught me, you know, how important that pattern was. I would not have taken another decision in terms of buying the horse, but it showed me afterwards that this was a clinically important measurement that I did before buying the horse.
And Emma, I know you you have a case about objective gait analysis. Could you present that, please?
Yeah, I have one here, which is an 8-year-old warm blood gelding. He had been lame for almost a year, right front. He was treated several times. I think he was blocked too on a back seal on the right front, and then treated in both coffin joints with corticosteroids, and then he also had PRP in the right front coffin joint. And he was rested, but every time he got back to training, he got lame again. So when I saw him the first time, I noticed there was also a little asymmetry on the right hind. And as I was always measuring the horses back then, the system also showed me asymmetry both right front and right hind. And we also had measurements from the withers, which indicated a left front lameness. And this is another story. I think we'll get into this later. But that gave me an idea of have another look at the right hind. So instead of continuing blocking the right front, I start blocking the right hind. And what happened was that the lameness on the right front became much better. It almost disappeared. And as well as the asymmetry on the right hind, it was almost completely gone. So we ended up diagnosing this horse also with some changes in the tarsometatarsal joint on that right hind. So as we continued to treat this joint, the horse became better in the right front asymmetry as well. So what the system made for me in this case was to help me diagnose the primary lame limb, but also show the owner that there was actually some kind of a problem in the hind that was not seen before. So this gives you some extra support in your lameness investigation. So this was a really good one for me. And it was also in the beginning where I started to using objective gait analysis.
And Emma, I think this case is so common that you're describing here. I think I've seen it so many times that with some horses, they do have quite a big, what we would call a compensatory head nod that comes actually from a hind limb lameness. And I think that is quite a common clinical mistake that I have made, and I think many colleagues with me, that you actually start blocking the front leg. Also, of course, because it's safer to work on a front leg. So I think we do have some bias with veterinarians, maybe not always targeting the hind, even if you're thinking that maybe this could be a hind limb problem. I know horses that have been treated over and over and over again in a front leg when the entire lameness actually sits in the hind. And the tricky thing here, I think what we see in research is also that some horses do this much more than others. So in some horses, they do not head nod at all as much, or they have to come up to a quite high level of hind limb lameness before they start head nodding. But in other horses, they seem to use this, what we would call a compensatory strategy, quite early on. So that makes it very, very tricky. Lameness workups are very tricky.
They are. And it might also have had some kind of pain related to the right front, of course, because it has some blocking pattern from that foot before. But still, this was the best resolution for this case.
So your case, Emma, leads me on to the next question, and that is for you, Elin. What about slape and multi-limb lameness? You have a horse that might be have a low-grade lameness on three legs. How does slape work with that?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Three-limb lameness is a very difficult case, I think, for everyone. Not at all uncommon, though, of course. Personally, I think one of the things that you see if you measure the horse repeatedly is that oftentimes these lamenesses aren't as big all the time. So you'll see some of them pop up a bit more over time. We also know something about these, what we'd call multi-limb versus compensatory patterns. So just to try to clear out, a compensatory pattern would be a pattern of a horse that has, let's say, a single limb lameness. Let's say it's the right hind that is the problem. And then we know, as Emma said, from objective gait analysis theory, that it's quite common that the horse would then show a head nod as if it was offloading the right fore. And it might show sort of a trunk asymmetry pattern of, well, the entire thorax, or if you measure on the withers, offloading the left fore. So we know these patterns, and SLAPE also gives the users an indication of if your pattern actually sort of adheres to the theory. If it's big enough and it adheres to the theory of compensatory patterns, SLAPE would say, hey, please consider if this might be the pattern that this horse has. That's not always the truth. It could, of course, as Emma said, be a horse that has a right front limb and a right hind limb lameness. Oftentimes what we see then is that when we measure the trunk asymmetry, it doesn't adhere sort of to any of the limbs, really. And that is a bit of a signal going, hey, okay, maybe there's a two-limb lameness here. So we know something about the patterns, and that's some of the basic theory that I think you have to digest being a veterinarian using objective gait analysis, and learning that doesn't take a very long time, and the device also supports you in that decision making a little bit. But if you have a horse then with a three-limb lameness, I think in general, like, you don't do anything else than you would do in clinical practice without objective gait analysis. You start with the worst leg. And the compensatory patterns can also help you to indicate that. So let's say in this theoretical case that we have a horse that has a right hind limb lameness, it has a left hind limb lameness, and it has a right forelimb lameness. One of these asymmetries will be the biggest one. And also, the compensatory pattern might indicate that you should focus on one of these legs. Then, of course, you add up all the rest of your clinical information, your palpation findings, how it works on the circle versus, on the straight line, how it reacts to different surfaces, how it reacts to all the provocation tests that you would do, which might be pressure tests, Churchill tests, of course, flexion tests. In Sweden, we used to use these old grepp och hakar, which you place something under the foot to make the hoof land in a particular way. So, you know, objective gait analysis is not everything in your lameness exam. Of course, there is a thousand other information pieces that you add to that puzzle. And then you start working up the limb that is of the greatest concern. What I do think, though, is that objective gait analysis still really helps you out, because this is difficult with or without gait analysis. And it can help you to keep on track. It can help you to circle in which the worst leg is. And maybe it is actually a hind leg, not a front leg, that is creating most of that asymmetry. And that objective gait analysis can also sort of help you to sort out. So I still think it's useful. Unfortunately, objective gait analysis does not make a lot of these lameness exams simpler. It's still very complex. The locomotor system is extremely complex, and it's very common with multi-limb lameness in horses. So it gives you more unbiased information, more objective information. It guides your decision-making, I think, or at least for me. But it still does not make multi-limb lameness a simple workup.
So you almost answered my next question I had in mind then. When do you need to be careful using SLAPE in your lameness or asymmetry evaluation of a horse?
Yeah, loving gait analysis in general, I think you should use this for everything, also as a documentation, as a potential learning. But you have to be careful to know some of the basics of interpretation. And there are some guides in the application itself that can help you to learn the basics. What I think is really important, and where I really want to usher some caution, is that if you place a rider onto the horse, The rider has the potential to induce a huge asymmetry in the horse, which might not at all be lameness related, but might be related just to the rider and how the rider is sitting or moving its hands in relation to the head of the horse. And especially if they are posting in trots, so sitting and standing up in the stirrups or in the saddle, that creates a known, quite big asymmetry. So if you would then have a horse running on a circle, the circle itself induces this type of asymmetry. You have to know circle-induced patterns. If you would then put on a rider and the rider would induce asymmetry, you should not interpret that as being, you know, lameness related in a horse per se. You really have to know all the factors that do create asymmetries in a horse, and not overinterpret a posting rider as being a hind limb lameness, for example.
And there you mentioned trot. If we move to Iceland, it's tilting. And that is difficult, at least I find extremely difficult to judge whether there's a symmetry or not. Emma, do you have any experience with objective gait analysis in Icelandic horses that don't trot very much?
Yes, I do. We have quite a few Icelandic horses in Denmark. And I think I'm at that level where I want them to be able to trot properly. Otherwise, I don't feel safe measuring anything. I think there are some studies done in Iceland where they measured asymmetries in tilt and so on. So I still keep them trotting if it's possible. Otherwise, it's quite tricky.
I completely agree with you, Emma. And the good thing with SLAPE, I know there are different gait analysis systems on the market, and it's really important if you work with Icelandic horses and lameness workups, you should know if your objective gait analysis system sort of knows which type of gait the horse is running in. And at SLAPE, SLAPE is very good at this. So in the background, there is actually an algorithm classifying using machine learning exactly which gait the horse is in. And it can even see these shifts between the pacey trot or the trotty trot, and it would, you know, tell that in the background. So for a user of SLAPE measuring an Icelandic horse, they should know then that SLAPE will then pull out only the strides that are classified as a decent trot or a good trot, and the other strides will not generate a result. And what we learned in our biomechanics studies on Iceland that Emma referred to, where we actually did induce a small degree of lameness in horses, and then we had them walk, trot, tot, and pace, was that tilt is an extremely difficult gait when it comes to lameness assessment. And potentially also it's a way for the horse to handle a lameness of going from a purer trot to a not so pure trot. So that makes it quite challenging using gait analysis in gaited horses. But it still gives you that additional piece of information that I think is very difficult to be without, because lameness exams in these gaited horses is extremely difficult. There are some vets that are very good at it. I know Isabella, for example, is a Swedish vet who works a lot with Icelandic horses. And so I think you can learn the skill, but it is very tricky.
Yeah. And when we're used to, if we can call it normal compensatory patterns in riding horses, I know Icelandic horses, they move quite differently, and they are expert in disguising their pain. So I think there's another layer to the lameness investigation there.
For sure. And I think, Emma, you're onto something interesting there as well, that the pain assessment of the horse is, of course, something that you do, I think, intuitively as a veterinarian often, but that we put more and more emphasis on and also do more and more research on. And of course, here, these horses are quite stoic as well. So in not looking only at the motion, but really looking at the behavior and the facial expression of horses can help you out to understand if this is, you know, asymmetry that is there because of the gait, or if this is actually pain related.
Thank you both for all of your valuable information and comments. I have asked you, Elin, but now I'm turning to Emma. Emma, how would you get started with an objective gait analysis system in your clinic?
Well, One important thing is to have some background knowledge for sure. And I know Slide, they provide you with everything you need. There is also a lot available on the in the internet. So when you feel that you are ready to go, I think you should just jump in and try it. You can have it running in the background for your first couple of cases, and then you do your analyze by yourself and don't use it for that case with the owner. And then I think most of you will think that this is a really a good help, and you will start using it more and more and feel more and more comfortable. So I think the hurdle is quite low. It's just about getting started.
Thank you. And thanks to both of you for a very interesting session about how to use objective gait analysis in the clinic in practical terms with special focus on SLIPE. We will be back with a new podcast in the theme of objective gait analysis, where we focus a bit more on rehabilitation and the use of OGA. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tak fordi du lyttede med til Hestedyllerne. Hvis du kan lide det, du hører, så læg en anmeldelse i din podcast-app, og glem ikke at fortælle dine kolleger om podcasten. Vi er snart tilbage med et nyt spændende afsnit af Hestedyllerne.